The date is April 22, 1976. Mrs. Robert Thompson has lived in and helped to shape the history of picturesque Chance Harbor, situated on the southern shore of New Brunswick. A book of Mrs. Thompson's poems was published last year when she was 93 years old, and she is presently in receipt of royalties from its sales. Mrs. Thompson, the narrator, will share some of her memories. The interviewer is Ethel Thompson. How old are you, Hattie?
I was 92 in March.
And where were you born?
Brooklyn, New York.
And when did you come to Chance Harbor?
October 1908.
Would you tell me about that?
We drove down from St. John, which was considered 20 miles, in a horse and carriage. It was a double-seated carriage. Had fringe on top, too. And there were two horses and two seats and a driver. My trunk was in front seat with the driver. And we were 6 hours driving down from St. John to Chance Harbor with 20 miles.
Was this a wedding or just a visit?
This is when we came to live.
You were married?
Yes, we had been married, and we had come to St. John by boat from New York to Boston, and then from Boston to St. John, the old line that used to plow between St. John and Boston. We only had two means of transportation, no automobiles, of course, and we went by boat most of the time, an open boat at that, and we also had the chance to go by train, but we'd have to go to Musquash to take the train. There were four horses in Chance Harbor. You could take your choice of the slowest one. And they took 2 hours to go from Chance Harbor to Musquash, 6 miles.
Could walk that fast?
Yes. And Jarvis Mawinney had a horse, and Uncle George Hargrove, and Mary Belding, and Uncle Dave Thompson. And one time, a friend of mine was coming to visit me, and Aunt Mary said I could have Nell and drive her to Musquash, but I mustn't let her run away. I had all I could do to make her walk. We got there to Musquash. I didn't know a thing about a horse, turning it or anything. So when I got to the entrance where the station was, there was a young man standing there, and I said, "Would you please turn this horse around for me?" He laughed and took hold of the bridle and turned her around. My friend happened to be sitting at the on Mrs. Dean's veranda. So we drove down. The only thing that got in our way going home was a skunk walked across the road, and I just had to stop the horse till it got across. But we always went by boat up until 1916, when people began to get cars. Yes. And we got our first car in 1916.
And, what kind?
A Ford. A baby Lincoln, I used to say.
Could you row a boat?
I learned to row, yes.
What about sail? Could you sail?
No, I never learned to sail the boat, but Bob's sisters all sail boats. Yes. One time we were coming down from St. John in an open boat, and the southwest wind came up. They're not very pleasant. And suddenly off Laurinville, the boat fetched right up short. And something had gotten on the propeller. Bob went back with an oar and discovered that a quilt had been floating just below the surface of the water. Somebody had thrown it out and it caught round the propeller. Got it off and got home.
Yes.
But that's a queer thing for people to do.
Yes. How did you get it off?
Bob cut it. He had his knife always with him. Cut it off. Oh, yes, and of course, on the shore those days, we had lighthouses. They're taking the lighthouses down. Longfellow called them the street lamps of the ocean. And I liked that.
Yes.
And now we won't have any street lamps of the ocean, for they're taking them all away. But in the old days, the mariners used to know all the lights. And they're from Big Latique in Charlotte County. They would name the lights Big Latique, Little Latang, West Quaddy, Grand Manan, Southern Wolves, Point Lepreau, Partridge Island, and In You Go. And of course that was St. John. Musquash didn't have any lake then, and neither did Chance Harbor. But now the Chance Harbor light is left. No, not the Chance Harbor light, the Musquash light is left. Chance Harbor light's been taken away. The reason the Musquash light is left, the fishermen petitioned the government to leave it on so they could tell where they were at night.
Yes.
It may be a good idea for people to know what the hurricane months are. June is too soon. July, stand by. August, don't trust. September, remember.
Very good.
One time we were on our way to St. John, the old shoreline train. The train left the track after it passed the trestle, Prince of Wales. And blocked the roadway. We had to stay there until a caboose came to take us up to St. John. We got there at 10 o'clock at night.
What about the cow's breakfast, Hattie?
Oh,
that's
yes.
Something new.
When I first went to Chance Harbor, the young people in the summer all wore a big hat, wide brim, high crown, but it kept the sun off. And it was called a cow's breakfast. It was big enough, supposed to be, for a cow's breakfast. You could buy them for 5 cents.
Where were they made? Did just men or women wear them too?
No, the children and the men wore them.
The
men wore them working to keep the sun off, you know. I'm supposed to be an old person, but I'm really not. I'm only 92. And it reminds me of Oliver Wendell Holmes' Last Leaf. My grandmama has said, poor old lady, she is dead long ago, that he had a Roman nose and his cheek was like the rose in the snow. But now he walks the streets and he looks at all he meets sad and wan, and he shakes his feeble head that it seems as if he said, they are gone. They say that in his prime, ere the pruning rife life of time cut him down, that the crier by the crier in the round, not a better man was found in the town. But now he walks the streets, and he looks at all he meets sad and wan, and he shakes his feeble head that it seems as if he said, they are gone. Neath a mossy marble rest lie the lips that he had pressed in their bloom, and the names he loved to hear have been carved for many a year on the tomb. I know it is a sin for me to sit and grin at him here, but his old three-cornered hat and his breeches and all that are so queer. And if I should live to be the last leaf on the tree in the spring, let them smile as I do now at the old forsaken bough where I cling.
Wonderful, wonderful. When was the Chance Harbor Women's Institute organized?
August 7th, 1914. That day, two women had come down from Fredericton. They belonged to the agricultural department. And they had organized the Lorneville Institute. They came to Chance Harbor, and we met at the schoolhouse, and they organized the Chance Harbor Institute, and I was the first president. The war had broken out on the 4th, that'd be 3 days before, so we had plenty of work to do. We went right to work with the sewing and knitting, collecting money, that kind of thing. I remember we sent $200 to the Belgian relief.
Did you?
And we would have demonstrations. We learned to knit. I didn't know how to knit until then. And we had a demonstration on spinning. Learned how the yarn was spun. The old days, some of the people had sheep, and they sheared their sheep and they spun their own yarn. There was a family lived across the way, old people that had come from Ireland, name of King, and they had sheep and they spun all their own yarn, and they wove blankets, and the women knitted the men's underwear, long ankle underwear. And I remember the Mike King was an old man to me then. He had a horse and a cow, and somebody went to borrow the horse. And Mike said, you'll have to take the cow too, because the cow went wherever the horse went. But then we had a demonstration in spinning, and the wool wheel was a great high wheel. And the flax wheel was a little low wheel, and I always noticed that the flax wheels were very pretty and shiny, well varnished. But the wool wheels were just ordinary looking things. She wouldn't think much of them as she went by.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe because they were used so much.
Yes.
The flax people wouldn't use it so much, I suppose.
Do you remember when the first school was built in Chance Harbor?
No, that was before I went there.
You did? It was before. It was at the Cold Spring? At the Cold Spring?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, Bob went to that one.
Did he?
Yeah.
And you, I want to ask you more about the Women's Institute. You became provincial president, did you not?
Yes, in 1939.
And you had a trip to England?
Yes.
And you saw the princesses? Doll houses.
The day that the king and queen came home to London, we were supposed to leave. We went to the station and were told we couldn't leave until 8 o'clock that night because the king and queen were coming home. That was in 1939.
Yeah.
And so two of our party went up into London, and I stayed down at the station. When it came time for the king and queen and all the little princesses, only two of them, to come home, the people gathered at the station. And I sat in the waiting room on a chair, and I thought to myself, I'll keep this chair. When the king and queen go by, I'll get up on it and I can see them. So I sat there quietly, and by and by the attendant came along and she said, I've got to take your chair, miss. And I said, oh, are you going to take my chair? She says, yes, the police don't want people standing on the chairs. They're afraid they'll fall off. I said, oh, I wish you wouldn't take my chair. She said, I tell you what we'll do, dearie. I'll get up on the chair and you can get up on with me when it comes by. I said, are you going to stand on a chair? And she said, certainly. How else will I see the king and queen? Exactly that.
Isn't that wonderful? Now, did you have a good look at the king and queen?
Yes.
From your chair?
They drove in an open barouche. And the little princesses sat facing the king and queen and waving and nodding to everybody. When I left the woman that wouldn't let me stand on the chair, I found a place in the crowd where I could see clearly. And there was a woman with a little boy there. She kept pushing him up to the front. And the people would push him back again because they're afraid he'd get hurt. And she said, I never saw such a lousy crowd. But they had a group of chairs along the front of the crowd, and the policemen would put the children on that, and they sat to watch the king and queen come home. But there were people, the crowds there, that stayed all night long and slept on the ground with blankets.
Yes.
And when people were leaving to meet the king and queen coming home, Queen Mary was there. We saw all the important people in England Winston Churchill and Queen Mary and all the important people.
What time of the year? Was it before war was declared?
It was in May.
May. Oh, yes. War was declared in September.
No, June.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. They had red carpet on the... horses ran over that red carpet.
Must have looked lovely. Black horses?
I think they were white.
You have a very nice doll collection, Hattie. Would you tell me how you started it?
I had a friend, a very dear friend, a schoolmate of mine. She took a trip to Europe. She brought back some little dolls. She was a kindergarten teacher, and she left these dolls in the closet of the kindergarten room. She died. My sister was appointed to the school and found the little dolls in the closet. The other teacher said, I'm going to give these to the children. And my sister said, oh, give them to me. My sister would love them. So she gave them to me. And there was one from Germany, one from Scotland, one from France, and two from Italy, dressed in the little native costume. And that started the doll collection. Then I received a little bisque angel that was brought to me by a nursing sister in the First World War. A soldier had given it to her. He had been brought in wounded, and he had this little angel in a box. And in the French graveyards, they have these little angels on artificial wreaths, and the angel has its hand up in blessing. This one had lost an arm in a battle of La Chapelle, and Allie brought me the doll. And I put that up on the top of the collection, and the little angel sat up there with its hand in blessing. Then I received dolls from all over the world. There was one from Greece. It looked like a gypsy woman. There was another from Brussels who was a lace maker. She wore a handmade lace cap and a dress trimmed with handmade lace. There were Alaskan dolls made by the Indians dressed in sealskin. And there was a doll brought to me from Arizona. The woman sits weaving. She's weaving the typical scene of the mountains that she sees before her. The baby's lying beside her as she weaves. She looks toward the west and has the sun behind the mountains.
A Russian one? There is one from Russia. The little ones fit inside?
Yes, there was Russian ones. And there were the little tiny Russian ones dressed in the crocheted clothes. There was a Cossack and a boy and a woman. And then there were the little ones that fitted in like tubs, one into the other. There was, had an, one from India, was made in an orphanage in India. And I had those made by a woman in Ottawa who made lovely things.
Yeah.
And
How many dolls did you have altogether?
178, I think.
And you knew each one, because I have seen you display them.
Yes, I
knew. And you spoke as though they were friends.
Yes, I used to like to talk about them. They seemed almost human. Well, it wasn't because I was interested in them as dolls. Is that they represented the countries that they came from and the costuming and their customs.
And the friends that gave them to you. And the friends that gave them to you?
Yes, Joe, I thought of the friend.
Yeah. Where is the collection now, Hattie?
It's up at Jim's. I gave it to Barbara. As a little girl, she was always with me, and she'd look at the dolls.
And this is a niece? Your niece?
Yes, my grandniece. Oh.